Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Let's Cover It, brought to you by The Covering Church.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you once again for tuning in to another podcast of Let's Cover It, sponsored by The Covering Church. And I'm sitting here with my good friend, Chris Dufford. My name is Dwayne Lee, and I certainly hope that you have enjoyed the past few conversations that we've had on the last few podcasts. Matter of fact, from our production team, it's my understanding that probably some of the best and most viewed podcasts that we have done thus far. So grateful to hear that, not only nationally, but internationally. Is that right, Chris?
That is correct.
Yeah, so which is a very good thing. And for those of you who may not necessarily know, we've been talking about Christians and politics. And the old adage was, you never talk about religion, you never talk about politics.
But, yeah, we do both.
But we do both. That's right. We jumped into the deep end of the pool, and it appears that some people liked it. And matter of fact, so much so that this one, we're going to talk a little more about that, again, from a biblical perspective. But probably one of the biggest things is, you know, we talk about all the political leaders that we have now, and maybe some in the past that we've had, especially as this country got started, but we really don't necessarily go beyond that too much. But one of the things that we wanted to discuss is, as we look at Scripture, we wanted to talk about, what does it mean to be a good king? What does it mean to be a bad king? Mm-hmm. And how does God deal with them? Because if you look at Scripture, not only those in when Israel was divided into the kingdom of Judah and the kingdom of Israel, but we had other kings as well. When they went into captivity, we had kings there that were not a part of Israel or Judah, either one, but they were bad kings as well, and God dealt with them. And so, matter of fact, there was one writer who said this. He said, the only thing that made them a good king was that they feared the Lord. That's what made them a good king. That was their underlying principle. That was their foundation, is that they simply feared the Lord. Now, I have to say, I've got a list here in front of me that shows me the list of the kings of Judah and the kings of Israel. And I got to say, Chris, that in the kings of Israel, there's not a one of them that was a good king.
That's correct.
I
think there were 20 kings, and every single one of them were evil.
Yeah, I ain't nothing but red, and I know that's not good English, but there ain't nothing but red.
I think they represent 9 dynasties.
I believe you're right, but so, even on the side of Judah, there were only 7 or 8 good kings. The rest of them were bad.
I think it was 10 and 10 ultimately.
Well, I guess it depends on who you're looking at, but I've got
Manasseh
7 or 8.
Manasseh is listed as evil, but yet he repents.
Yeah,
we have Hezekiah the same way.
Well, it all started with Rehoboam and then all of his descendants, stuff like that. But we'll get there, okay? But the bottom line is why in the world did Israel, because God didn't set them up that way, why in the world did Israel want to have a king, right? Because they wanted to be like the rest of the nations.
Yes.
And so in 1 Samuel, chapter 8, there is this dialogue because Samuel, who was a prophet, was getting old, and so he turned all of the responsibilities over to his 2 sons.
That's correct.
But as a result of that, they didn't follow Samuel's leadership, and they started doing some things that were not approved by Jehovah God.
Quite immoral.
Quite immoral. And so the Israelites said, you know, Sam, you got to do something here.
I like that. Hey,
yeah,
Sam.
Yeah. And so we need a king.
Yeah.
You know, we want a king. We want to be like the rest of the nations. And so we get past of all this because originally God set them up after they came out of the land of Egypt with Moses. And then after Moses was off the scene, Joshua took over and God set up judges, right,
mm-hmm.
for the children of Israel. And But that didn't last long either. And as a result, they said, we want a king. And so by the time we get to Samuel, 1 Samuel chapter 8, God, in his wisdom, says, you know what? Give them what they want. But here's what's going to happen when they get it. And God begins to lay out for Samuel the things that are going to happen when they get a king.
It's an entire list.
What's that?
It's an entire list.
It's an entire list, yeah. And so
taking your daughters and enslaving your sons and
that's right.
stealing their wealth.
You're basically going to work for the man.
You're going to work for the man. You're going to be working for the government.
That's right.
And that's basically what he said.
That's what he said. And so what Samuel does is Samuel goes to the leaders of Israel and says, this is what God said. God will give it to you, but here's what's going to happen. And by the time you get done with chapter 8, what happens is the people of Israel said, we want a king anyway. And God says to Samuel, hear their words. And that's what happens. And that begins this whole dynasty of kingship, if you will, with various rulers, and how God deals with the children of Israel, how God deals with the kings and their kingdoms.
I think it's the first example, really, of identity politics.
There you go.
Because when they chose Saul, they didn't choose him because of his spiritual foundation or his godliness. They chose him because he was...
because of his stature.
He was tall and handsome and good-looking. You know, he was the JFK of... everybody saw his handsomeness and his height and his military prowess, and they said, this is who we want.
Right.
Even though his entire rulership was a disaster.
Disaster.
And it's because when they chose the leader, they chose him based on charisma and how he looked and how he spoke instead of what his policies
were. Instead of his policies.
Yes.
And that is the bottom line.
That is correct.
And so... When you begin to look at that and not look at the things that are real, the things that really make a difference, I don't care whether it's this country or the next country. It doesn't matter. If you're looking for things, and I get it, the way the world works now is the fact that there are so many things that take place behind the scenes that you don't necessarily get everything that you say that you're going to get. I know Venezuela is that way right now.
Well, they have a communist government.
Well, they do.
And
they're questioning voting that they had.
Right, they're questioning the results of the election.
Exactly.
I think there's a large portion of the population who feels like the election was stolen.
Exactly. And that sounds familiar.
Yes, and I think that's a question of power over concern for the nation.
Well,
I think that you're seeing a complete failure. Venezuela is a good illustration because they were the third most prosperous, third richest nation in the world before their current leadership was elected. And when they elected him in power as a socialist, he immediately, within a year, destroyed the economy with his socialist policies. And they have just collapsed economically.
They have.
And so it's not a question of the president looking at his actions and saying, well, maybe my economic policies aren't working. It's all a question of him hanging on to power.
Right,
and
exactly.
And so this is what's leading to this political upheaval in the nation is it's not a leader concerned for his country.
No.
It's a leader concerned about holding on to their power.
Exactly.
And so when power holds precedence over the well-being of a nation, that becomes a major problem.
Well, exactly. And that's the way it was in the Old Testament as well.
It was. I think that we are seeing an upheaval in a large portion of the world, not just in our country in the United States.
Oh, absolutely.
We're seeing it in Europe. We're seeing it in the Middle East. We're seeing it in South America. And it's going either direction. It's either running as fast as they can towards socialism, or they're running as far away from it as they can get. And so I think we're seeing this same thing playing out around the world.
We are. And as the old saying goes, history is repeating itself.
Yes.
And so what do we do with it? And because there have been those that says, well, is God just going to let this just all play out and he's just sitting back and waiting? Or is he active in what's taking place?
Well, I think in Romans 13, it's very obvious. Paul says that God is directly active in this,
yeah,
raising up leaders and raising up nations. John Calvin said in the Institutes of Christian Religion something to the effect that God raises up evil, immoral leadership for the purpose of judging a nation.
Mm-hmm.
Bringing a nation to judgment.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we look at Israel, for example, they wanted a king. And God had expressed to them, this decision that you're going to make politically will ultimately be your undoing. Is this what you want?
Right.
We don't care. We want the now over the future. We want to sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the immediate.
Right.
And that is always a disaster for any country.
For any country.
Always a disaster.
Right. And so as a result of that, if you want, you can give us some examples of for kings who did not do well. I mean, matter of fact, I'm looking here at even Jeroboam's son. After Jeroboam died, his son, Nahab,
mm-hmm,
yeah, practiced all the evils that he did.
He did, sacrificing children to Baal and setting up Asherah idols.
Yep. And so, but the interesting thing is, he only ruled for 2 years.
That's correct.
Yeah, only ruled for 2 years. And Baasha assassinated him.
Correct. The end of Jeroboam's dynasty.
That's right.
So it's prophesied in 1 Kings 18, or 1 Kings, I think it's 14. 1 Kings 14, mm-hmm, that God tells Israel through the prophet that he is going to bring judgment upon the house of Jeroboam because of his evil, because he led them into this idolatry, this sacrifice of their children, and so on. And ultimately, he goes on in the prophecy, says that he's going to give them over to the people across the river, that is the Euphrates River.
Right.
That the prophecy is, you've got 200 and I think it was 208 years is the length of time from that period, mm-hmm, that the northern kingdom existed. But in essence, God said, you're done.
Right.
That they have their first king as a northern kingdom, but they're already done.
Right.
Because of the choice that they made. And if you look at the choice, it in reality, it is the rejection of wisdom for the passion of youth. Mm-hmm. Because Rehoboam, after the death of Solomon, mm-hmm, he calls in all of his elders and says, and we're talking elders, we're talking about men that have been around for quite a long time,
right,
who are property owners, who are business owners, who are the driving force behind the economy of Israel.
Right.
And they come to him and said, he said, what do you think we should do? Well, I think you should ease the tax burden on the people. You should ease up on the people, and we need to allow, in essence, free market. We need to allow all this to go on. But instead, the younger generation comes in, and they said, no, you need to tax them to death. We want our cut. We want our portion of it.
Right.
You need to rein that in, and we need to make it even harder on the people.
Mm-hmm.
And Rehoboam has a choice. Which one do I take?
Right.
Wisdom of ages or passion of youth who want to sacrifice the permanent on the altar of the immediate?
Right.
And that's what he chooses.
Right.
He chooses that younger crowd who wants to radically change everything in the culture and the government. He goes down that path, and it is a destructive path.
It is.
There is no coming back from that.
No, not at all. Because when you travel that path, it is, you cannot turn a nation around. You can't.
I heard someone say the other day, you can vote yourself into socialism, but you have to fight your way out of it. And that's a fact.
That is a fact.
That's the truth.
Yep, for sure.
An ancient Greek philosopher once said, once the people find out they can vote themselves a raise, the country is doomed. Mm-hmm. And so when we start looking at identity politics, and we start looking at economic division, mm-hmm. Pitting wealthy against the poor and sure. all of these kind of things.
Right.
Once we start going down the divisive road, right. once we take a nation and we divide it like Rehoboam did,
right.
I'm going to cut a line between the elder generation and the younger generation, and I'm going to choose the younger generation over the elder generation. Mm-hmm. Once we start down that road of division and we start electing leaders who are radical in that division, mm-hmm. we sign the death warrant of a nation. Every nation that's done that has never come back.
Has never come back from it. You're exactly right. So with all of that said, and when you think about it, can you give me an example of maybe some kings and some leaders that were not from Israel, they weren't from the kingdom of Israel or the kingdom of Judah, who God dealt with as well?
Yes. Well, certainly we can look at the Babylonians.
Right.
So when we go to the book of Habakkuk, Habakkuk complains and says, look at the evil of all of my people. Look at what they're doing. You know, they're stealing, there's theft by fiat, they're stealing from others, they're robbing us, they're mm-hmm. they're using taxation against us. All of these things that he lists, and God says, you want judgment? I'm going to bring in a nation that I'm going to judge you with, and they're evil. Mm-hmm. And God paints how evil they are, and Habakkuk says, where's the fairness in this? And he says, well, what do you see what I do to them?
Right.
And certainly he did that.
He did.
And you can see nation after nation historically that once they have forsaken God, once they have turned their back on God, that nation has decayed and declined. Once they've embraced the moral relativism and the immoral elements of the world, and they have cast off the warnings of the past. Mm-hmm. You know, George Washington said, a man cannot adequately rule unless he rules from the scriptures, from the Bible.
Right.
And you have men like Abraham Lincoln who said that we depend on God. Mm-hmm. We have to have dependence on him.
Right.
Our money says in God we trust. And yet as our nation in America, we've cast that aside.
Oh, absolutely.
I think Barack Obama, one of our former presidents, made the comment, whatever we're no longer a Christian nation. And he said that sort of like proudly.
Yeah.
I would never been proud about that statement.
No.
That's
no.
a recipe for disaster.
Absolutely.
And so I think that we can look at nations such as France,
mm-hmm.
who their kings became morally bankrupt. I mean, the king's courts before the French Revolution were disastrous. Mm-hmm. They were morally bankrupt. They heavily taxed the people to the place where people were starving, mm-hmm. all for them to have all the power and to live the high life of pleasure. And right. it led to the French Revolution.
Right.
In the 1790s, the French had the revolution. The king lost his head.
Yep.
And Napoleon comes to power.
Right.
And we see Napoleon, generally a godless leader,
right.
who from, you know, when he was coronated in 1802 mm-hmm. To 1815. In 1815, he's sent to the island of Helena where he dies. In 1821, ruled just a short time. You could see it in the Germans and Adolf Hitler and all the fascist nations. You can see it in Japan in World War II. We can see it in Russia, in the Soviet Union. That, interestingly enough, here's a nation that had to put up a wall to keep people in.
Right.
Not keep people out.
Right.
To keep people, if you want to see how evil a nation is, when they've got to put up walls to keep their people in, mm-hmm. that shows you how despotic that country really is.
Absolutely.
And so when we see that going on, that shows evil. And of course, it's collapsed.
Right.
We now have, we can see it in China, though China right now seems to be an economic powerhouse. Will it last? There's no way.
No.
No, God's not going to let their godless nation go on forever. You see it in North Korea. You can see it in Cuba. You can see it in nations in South America, nations in Africa, nations that have turned their back on God. And those nations and cultures have collapsed.
They have.
And we are facing that doorway even today here in our nation.
We are. We are. And so with that being said, what's one to do?
Well, I think as Christians, if we're going to look at being in politics and we're going to vote, we have to start realizing that we cannot get caught up in the cultural arguments.
Yep.
So if we're going to stand on, for example, this may get us pushed down in the algorithm, but if we're going to stand on abortion mm-hmm. and say that abortion is murder, then and someone says, well, I'm going to stand except when the life of the mother is in danger, we're going to work to make abortion illegal. I would agree with that position. Mm-hmm. I think that even it would be a hard choice if my wife was pregnant and it came down to the baby's life or my wife's life, that would be a hard choice for me to make.
Sure.
But the point is that if we believe in life, that sounds radical, but that's how I'm going to vote for the person that's closest to that position that we can get mm-hmm. in politics. Yes.
I hear you.
And I think that if we're going to look at protecting our children in America today, we have people talking about banning books. Nobody's banning books. We're looking at age-appropriate books for children, protecting the innocence of our children. I think that Christians should look at that.
Sure.
We put ratings on movies to keep kids out without their parents because of what's in the movie. And yet one side of the political spectrum right now is accusing the other side of banning books, and that's not the case.
Right.
It's age-appropriate questions. One side wants to expose our children and sexualize our children, and the other side doesn't. Which one is the one that Christians should stand on? That's the question.
That's the question.
Yeah. So when it comes to voting, are we going to vote as Christians on these issues, or are we going to vote on what lines our pocketbook best or what lines up with our identity politics the best and cast aside the moral principles of the Bible? This is why we're in this problem that we're in.
Right.
Because it used to be 30, 40 years ago, Christianity virtually voted as a block.
Right.
And now because the church, in a large sense, has gone down the road of embracing the culture, Christianity has become marginalized as a political force in our country.
Oh, absolutely.
Because we no longer vote on a biblical framework.
Correct.
We vote on a cultural framework.
Right.
And so for me, my ultimate person that I answer to
right.
is God.
That's right.
And if God's going to bring judgment on America, as far as I can vote, it won't be because of how I voted.
Right.
But that doesn't guarantee that Christians won't go through that judgment.
Oh, sure.
I mean, certainly Daniel, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, they were sitting in Babylon.
They were.
Having seen their families wiped out.
And taken into captivity.
Or taken into captivity. Yeah. Even though they were godly men.
They were.
Because God, so Christians are going to stand around and we're going to go one day, why in the world did God bring judgment on our country? Really? First of all, you all abandoned, many of us have abandoned the biblical way of thinking, the right. biblical framework.
Right.
For a secular framework. And we've elected leaders who clearly are taking stands on an anti-biblical position.
Sure.
And an anti-biblical framework.
Right.
And
as a result, we would all suffer.
We will all pay that price.
That's right.
Even though I pray for our nation and other nations of the world. I prayed for Venezuela this morning that
yep.
they will not
right.
collapse into civil war. That's
right.
not good for anybody.
No, it's not.
But the point being, as Christians, we have an entire Bible full of examples of bad leadership and what it does to a nation.
Right.
And yet no one in America today would vote for a candidate who says, I want to set up an altar and burn our children to Baal.
I would certainly hope not.
It's hard to say,
I would hope
that that's the case, right?
Well, I would certainly hope that that is the case.
That's yet right. we do it every day in an abortion clinic.
We do.
And we vote for leadership who stand up and say, I think it's a woman's right to choose. A woman's right to choose what? Murder?
Right.
I mean, that's what it comes down to. I'm going to get probably crucified. Who are you to make that decision? You're not a woman.
Right.
I only go by what the Bible says and about life.
Right.
And I promise you, if my wife was sitting here, she'd be in the same position that I'm in.
Sure. Sure. So again, we could talk for days regarding all of this, but like we said from the very beginning, we want to take all of this from a biblical perspective. And yes, when it comes to politics and religion, all that kind of good stuff, people take sides, cultural sides, party sides. But what we want to do is we want to take a biblical side.
Yes.
We want to say this is the biblical foundation. This is where we come from because this is what God said, not because of a party or because of a people or anything else. But this is where we stand. And there will be several who will not like it.
Yeah.
There will be several who will say, as a result, that, you know, not only am I going to turn you off and not listen to your podcast anymore, but there may be other things that come down the line. But at the end of the day, for you, for me, for Chris, for it, for the people that are behind the cameras, all of that, you need to make a decision.
Yes.
You can't waffle. You can't say, well, whatever happens, happens. You need to make a decision.
I think that there are two principles here. One is the Bible says that righteousness exalts a nation.
Right.
And sin is a reproach to any people.
There you go.
And I think that means that I personally have never voted party lines, if that makes sense.
Oh, absolutely.
I'm always stay informed on where the candidate stands.
Right.
And I try, in a lot of ways, we don't always get the best choice. We don't always to choose the person that is the best suited for our platform.
For the platform, right.
Christian platform.
That is correct.
So, and the second problem is that sometimes I think it's dangerous for us to, I'm trying to think of how to say this without sounding like a, so let's, for example, we have a very minority candidate that's running who fits all of our Christian platform.
Mm-hmm.
And then we have the two major political parties that are running.
Right.
And one of them on the one side is pro-abortion, pro-LGBTQ, pro-transgenderism, pro-butchering our children, mm-hmm. pro-all of these things that we stand against biblically.
Sure.
Again, I'm not talking about taxation. I'm not talking about, Social Security. And I'm not, those things are human established things. I'm talking purely about biblical things.
Biblical, right.
So in these biblical principles, we have we may have a minority candidate that lines up with everything we do. And so we vote for them and we sacrifice the potential of perhaps cutting off the radicalism of the party that has the most to gain against a biblical view,
right?
A cultural view that's against us.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is one of those things where Christians, I'm not going to tell you what to do, but I'm going to say it's something you have to weigh.
Sure.
Do I vote for this person strictly to say I voted for the best?
Right.
Or do I vote to try to stop the cultural decline? And I personally have wrestled with that in my Christian life. I've wrestled with how do we do that? Because sometimes the candidates we had to vote for, neither one of them are worth voting for. It's like, I got one, it's this, one's that. And,
right.
This has this in their closet and background. The other one has this. And this one, wants this. This one wants that. But neither one of them stand on a biblical worldview. How do I vote?
How do you vote? I know.
And so some Christians say, well, I'm just not going to.
Right. That's what I was going to say.
And
that's not right either.
I don't think so. I think God gave us the right to do that. And as we said in our very first podcast, there's people around the world that don't have that opportunity. And that's shouldn't waste that.
That's right.
That God gave us.
That's right.
But at the same time, we have to weigh what is the greatest good to bring about godliness. Because, mm-hmm. Righteousness exalts a nation. And sin is a reproach to any people. And I will tell you that I really get my hackles up when I see candidates standing up and they're just flaunting their fist in the face of God.
Right.
And I think to myself, man, you don't realize that there's a payday someday. As the old pastor preached that message, there's a payday someday. You're standing before the Lord one day.
That's right.
For this choice, these positions you're taking.
Right.
And then a lot of times they'll come trotting out the Bible.
Right.
Well, where's your, you know, and they don't know the first thing about the Bible.
No, they don't.
But they want to try to foist it on me.
That's right. which is not a good place to be. So with all of that said, I hope that's helped you a little bit. I hope that's helped you to see that at the end of the day, you need to go back to Scripture. You need to see what has taken place with kings that did good. And when the king did good, you know what?
God blessed the people.
God blessed the people.
Yes.
And the surrounding people.
And the surrounding nations.
And
yes.
The surrounding nations.
Yes.
But when they did bad.
Then the surrounding nations came and brought judgment to them.
That's true.
That's a fact.
And so go read it for yourself. I think you'll enjoy it. I think you'll get a better picture. And hope that it helps you today. Hope that it encourages you and strengthens you along the way. Thank you so much for watching Let's Cover It, and we'll figure out what we're supposed to do next. Until then, God bless you.
Thanks again for joining us. Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe to the Let's Cover It podcast, brought to you by The Covering Church.